This is Doctoring Up Design, a lively, interactive lecture series presented by Design Hardware and held in their recently remodeled showroom on 3rd Street in Los Angeles. Doctoring Up Design was created to address your pain points in the ever-changing world of design and architecture. And over the past 2 years, there have been more than a few pain points to address. This episode features Jennifer Connolly, Senior Project Manager at Morley Builders, J.D. Kranz, Project Management with Morley Builders, and Nate Abramson, President of Design Hardware. The following conversation is a deep dive into the challenges facing builders, architects, and everyone looking to plan and complete a construction project in these. If you were waiting for me to say unprecedented times, I'm not going to, because we can't keep calling these times unprecedented. Yes, every day is bringing new and unforeseen challenges. However, we've already seen tariffs and extreme cost increases. We've seen product shortages and supply chain disruptions. We have experience with severe weather and environmental conditions that disrupt or completely eliminate the ability to receive building and design materials. So, moving forward requires action based on what we know combined with anticipatory planning. Project planning, staffing, budgeting, supply chain, and cost controls, they're all discussed here. You're also going to hear about how these experts view current and future changes in the design industry. These changes require flexibility, specification adjustments, material substitutions, and relying heavily on industry relationships. Keep listening, and you're going to find a ton of answers to questions that you've been asking yourself. Design Hardware's newly remodeled showroom is where you will find a gallery-style space with a thoughtful display of products purposefully positioned to allow unbridled exploration and discovery. High-end faucets, luxury tile, natural stone, wood floors, and bespoke hardware selections are presented in a holistic manner, strategically arranged to stimulate creativity and transition your vision from the conceptual stage to a fully realized space. They also have the ability to help you navigate the specification challenges that we're finding today. They're conveniently located with free parking available, so stop by to find inspiration, collect samples, get expert advice, and tackle everything on your list all in one place. Visit them online at designhardware.com or in the real world, 6053 West 3rd Street in Los Angeles. We're talking about the business. We're talking about some really interesting issues right now as they affect the business. We're talking about management and management of supply chain, management of people, the port backups, which is a huge one. We're going to get to that as it relates to product, local solutions, risks, allowances, local versus national as it relates to specifying. We had a pre-call to talk about a lot of these issues, and you really opened my eyes to, in all of the conversations that I've been having, I realized something after we were finished talking, and that is that everything that's happening in the industry right now is happening so quickly that planning for things, which when you have a project manager and a pre-construction manager sitting up here, planning and logistics are pretty much everything, safe to say?
That's true.
Okay. Yes.
So when it comes to an inability to plan, we're talking about how to do these things in real time. You know, and with this, I kind of wanted to, the first thing I want to do is, Nate, I'm going to start with you. Brief introduction, sort of what you do and how long you've been doing it.
Okay, my name is Nate Abramson. I'm the president of Design Hardware. I've been doing this coming up on 37 years. I spend most of my days reading architectural plans, coordinating quotes, executing our supply, dealing with our own engineers, and getting the material and supply, and then of course trying to collect our money. So that's what I do in a nutshell every day.
Jen.
Okay. Hi, I'm Jen Conley, and I'm a senior project manager at Morley Builders. I've been with them for the last 6 years, but I've been in the industry for 16, mostly on the operations side, so running very large jobs. I worked at the LAX Tom Bradley Terminal. I worked at the Academy Museum, and just finished up Apple's headquarters. And now, just recently, have transitioned into the pre-construction department at Morley.
J.D. Kranz. I've been with Morley Builders as well for over 20 years now. I started in the industry right out of college and started as a project manager on sites, just like Jen. And then the last 10 years, I've been transitioning in and out of pre-construction, estimating, concrete world, different things related to the front end of the business all the way up until the start of the construction.
First question, and I kind of want to set the table here a little bit. And I want to go around because I think because you all do such different things and your responsibilities are so different, I think that there might actually be some similarities in responses. But I am curious, the differences now in what you do versus pre-COVID and how the business has changed for you individually. JD, I'll start with you this time.
Sure. I mean, I think for us, from my point of view, you know, I work a lot with subcontractors, knowing cost structures of things, knowing schedules related to that. I think the biggest difference is just the in-person meetings. We're not attending design meetings on a daily basis anymore or a weekly basis. We're more Zoom oriented. It's a typical answer, but so just the in-person meetings versus the calls and the Zoom meetings are the biggest difference for me. I don't think anything other than that has changed, other than trying to understand, as you mentioned, the craziness that is the market right now in terms of cost structures. You're relying on your historical information more, but that is not always going to hold true in today's world right now. So,
Jen.
Geez, there's a lot that changed. I'll speak from, because JD kind of mentioned the pre-construction challenges, but from the field, when COVID hit, I was in the middle of finishing a project, and it was already a really, really tight project schedule-wise and really high quality. And to be able, we had to first immediately reduce the work staff that was in the building because we had fully enclosed buildings, so we couldn't put people on top of each other. There's obviously a human concern of making sure everybody was safe. That was first and foremost. So it kind of just, how do you balance that with the expectation of finishing on time? And you obviously had to slow down. So that was the immediate, what do I do? And then we had a lot of my own team members come to me and say they weren't comfortable coming to the job anymore. We had to figure out how to allow people to work remote, just like everybody kind of had to figure it out. But when you're on a job site, it's more hands-on. So how do you do that? But we figured it out. And I think that it is going to make the industry and our career paths better for it. There's created more flexibility in that. So there's good things that came out of it. But I think what continues to be challenging is that a lot of people rethought their kind of lives and what they wanted to do. And now there's a shortage, not only in material and supply chain, but there's also a shortage in workers on every level, from, you know, the management side and the labor force. So I think that's also something that's still unpredictable. Everybody hopes that it'll come back, but it's still a challenge in the field.
So true. You know, Nate, it's really interesting because I think for this particular question, what has changed for you might be the most dramatic.
We've been blessed with, and I apologize for my voice, probably ate a frog or something the other day. We've been blessed with the ability to do work remotely because of the uniqueness of our trade. It takes an amount of experience that takes years to acquire, and we just don't have the luxury of necessarily getting somebody within our access to our offices, wherever they may be. So we've been utilizing remote desktop, or our computers, our servers, to access this information remotely and to be able to share it. So when COVID hit, we didn't need to change engineering-wise or sales-wise, we didn't need to change our communication process. However, as Jen mentioned, boy, that was one big challenge, is to get human beings on site, because you can't hang a door through a Zoom, and that was quite a challenge. The challenge, as Jen mentioned also, is the fact that The craftsmanship of doing what we do is not something which is acquired. Even the union has many different levels of apprenticeship, from one all the way up to a journeyman, which takes years to acquire. A lot of people bailed out. They're not available anymore. And here you have professionals that have made commitments to their owners to get their job done, and screaming and needing this material and work installed. We just don't have, you know, we just cannot find, employ enough people to throw out. So we've got to be very, very careful about what we do. On top of that, because the supply chain today is so fragmented with meeting ship dates, we would go from a wood door, custom wood doors, which we sell, is the only thing we sell, is every one of our doors, whether it be fire rated, soundproof, bulletproof, whatever, is custom made for an opening. And it went from anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks to 23 weeks. So, okay, so we need to make sure that our architects, which are our partners as well, communicate things as veneer, color, match, size, swing. The other challenge that we have is, because of the extended lead time, we get one shot at this. I can't go to my partners and tell them, well, we'll finish the building in 23 weeks because something got messed up. It's just unacceptable. So we have to double up on our quality control, on our engineering, quality control with our field people. And pricing, of course, is absurd.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. Well, here's kind of the next thing, and I love having pre-construction as well as project management here, because I think that the two really do dovetail nicely. And I'm just curious, you know, for my own edification, I think it's interesting to know how you two in particular work together on a project.
Sure. If I may, real quick, I was just going to respond on the from Nate's comments about the lead times on things, and I think that's one aspect that's changed dramatically from, I guess, the setting up of the job, and everything's earlier. Everything is becoming earlier. Yes, we always like to do things early and get the schedule in line, but the time frames on things, we're trying to make deals with people way before we even sign the GMP up or the contract with the owner, just so that we can be in that path of committing and agreeing to that schedule. As far as how Jen and I work together from a you know, business relationship side of it, you know, a lot of the times we like to bring in our project managers early on, whether it's like DDs or CD level drawings, so that they can get their input in terms of schedule, logistics, and how the job is going to be run. I take that input. Luckily, I have that experience, and that's unique to, I think, Morley and some of our other pre-construction managers, that a few of us have 10, 12 years experience in the field running jobs. And I think that benefits us from the fact that we have these relationships with our superintendents and other project managers that we've worked with, so that we can reach out if we have a question. We understand how the schedules relate to the supply chain and things of that sort. But I do rely on my project managers a lot to help out. They have good relationships as well with those superintendents and subcontractors as well. So,
yeah, I think just a second what he said, we usually bring on the project manager and the superintendent in the pre-con, last level pre-con, so that we're kind of merged together and in line with the thinking, where the budget's at, where, you know, we had to take some risks, where we had to, you know, get with the owner and carry an allowance because things were unknown or whatnot. That's always been our process. So I think it's just even more in tune now that we have to bring people on early and kind of be on the same page. I think what is even more has kind of brought out this is that the team, we now like work even more hands-on with the owner for them to understand all of these risks and things that are happening and what the assumptions that we're trying to make and the things that we're trying to do, kind of think outside the box. Recently, I just worked on a pre-construction job as a project management team, and we all but bought out all the subcontracts prior to getting our own contract with the owner. And we did that in an effort to allow the owner to kind of also get some of the savings that we get sometimes when we, you know, ink the contract with the subcontractor. So that was benefit the owner, but also it was kind of hopefully helping the subs to mitigate their risks so that they can get their purchase orders out and all that stuff right at the same time that they're giving us quotes. Because most quotes now cannot be held for more than 30 days. And that might have been on everybody's paper, if that. That may have been on everybody's paperwork for forever, but now everybody's like holding the feet to the fire. I just talked to an electrician the other day, and he says his quotes are now being written no more than 24 hours. So it's crazy. So we're all lining up. We're all trying to get through that bureaucratic paperwork faster and be on the same page so that we can make that happen and everybody is going to be able to be successful at the end of the day. Because, you know, this is a time where people are defaulting, unfortunately, and that is not good for anybody, especially the person that defaults, but not the owner, not us, not a subcontractor. So we are trying to work with our clients that are, you know, pursuing work right now, which we hope that everybody starts to pursue more and more, but we just kind of have to help assess those risks for them. I mean, this is something that, you know, as a project manager, pre-construction manager, we always try to look at the problems and be problem solvers. I mean, that is kind of our job. So this is just another problem that's kind of thrown at us, and try to figure out, you know, what the best solution can be for everybody.
I have found that, and we had a pre-call, and we were talking about a few things, and one of the things that I think is really fascinating is a few months ago, I was having a conversation with somebody, and we were talking about the port of LA, and at the time, there were 29 ships backed up, waiting to offload, and it was kind of stunning because, you know, the traditional Port of LA traffic is, I want to say, between 8 and 12 ships a day, I think, is what they generally would handle. So at the time it was 29. I was like, wow, that's crazy. And then you're laughing because you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And then a couple weeks later, it was like, wow, they're up to 44. And then, wow, they're up to 69. And I heard the other day they're in the 80s now. So here's the thing. So you've got, and you're talking about planning and strategically trying to envision what's coming down so that you can figure out how to work with it. So now it's in the 80s for the ships at the Port of LA that are backed up as far as offloading. And apparently they're offloading their traffic. They're offloading, you know, it's not the problem. They're getting rid of 20, 24 ships a day as they're offloading. They're like, they're huge. They're doubling their capacity, but there's just more product coming in. At the same time, you look at that ships off the coast of mainland China, there's about 150 plus right now. They're waiting to onboard product. So if it can't get on, that's just China, right? If they can't get the product on the ships, they still have to get over here, and then they can't get them off the ships. Clearly, that indicates that the problem doesn't appear to be clearing up anytime soon. At the same time, you know, you work with clients and at the same time, they don't understand all the time. It's like, well, why is this happening? So I imagine that the relationship between partners and firms has to get tighter. The contracts have to get tighter. The agreements have to get tighter. The expectations have to get tighter. Jen, I'll start with you and sort of how you work with, and JD, you as well, how you work with your partners specifying product on the front end. And then when there's an issue, you know, how do you work with someone like Nate and say, okay, well, he calls you back and says, you know what, I know it was 18 to 24, well, now it's 24 to 36, and the project is scheduled for sooner. It's like, I can't deal with that kind of timeline. You're nodding because you know exactly what I'm talking about. Clearly, you've had to deal with this. How do you deal with this and maintain the integrity of the firm? Because it's important. You know, Morley's been around for 75 years. You have a reputation.
Sure.
How do you protect that?
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly a challenge. I mean, there's a job right now that we, you know, started about 3 years ago. It's a large project. It has multiple buildings on it. And unfortunately, one of the things that's holding up the whole building being turned over is aluminum rails, and everybody knows aluminum's up through the roof, and you can't get a TCO from the city without railings. So it's one of those things that when we signed the contract was 8 to 12 weeks. That's typical lead time. It turned into 36 weeks. That was in the course of, you know, of course, before COVID hit, we had signed that contract. You know, so that one has been tough for everybody to swallow. Ourselves, the client, nobody could have anticipated it. It kind of is what it is. We've turned every rock that we can, though, to try to figure out, is there an alternative product that we can use? I think on one of the buildings, because there's multiple that are opening, they're using wood railings, which is not, you know, going to be a permanent solution. But then wood started going through the roof, too, so they couldn't use the wood, even temporary stuff. So we are trying to come up with solutions as much as we can with the client. Things like substitutions, things that are temporary, things that may not have the lasting duration that they wanted, and then, you know, with the plan to replace them later, things like that, for the current projects that are under construction. The projects that we're pursuing, now we have kind of an opportunity to talk to the design team, talk to the subcontractors both, and that's why I'm saying the teams are getting tighter and tighter with their communication, like you were alluding to earlier. In that we are all trying to be on board up front when we're negotiating these contracts, so that there aren't as many surprises. So, you know, a design team may specify one product and a subcontractor comes and says, that product, it's impossible. There's no way I'm going to get it, but here's a similar product. You know, can we re-specify? Can we, you know, bring in these type of things? So everybody's kind of working together too, and designers are more than they're kind of expecting that. They kind of know that. They're like, yeah, this was our design intent now, but, you know, if we can get something that's closer and it works within the budget and the schedule, we're open to that. And the owners are kind of starting to understand that as well.
You know, I think I'll just add that, you know, with Morley's 75 years, you know, history here in Southern California only, you know, we have strong relationships. We've done work, you know, anywhere from the cathedral to the Getty renovation in Malibu to student housing work in UCI. And so we have a vast, I'll call it, pool of subcontractors that we have really good relationships with. And we rely on them day in and day out. I rely on them even more now from pre-construction side for their input and for their expertise. And as Jen was saying, just to that effect, you know, helping us resolve these long lead items that are now known or at least, you know, aware of, can we substitute something different? Can we look at an alternate material? One of the things I thought of as we're coming up here was, you know, at one time, a couple years ago, the countertops and the granite and the quartz coming out of China with tariffs, everybody was really concerned about the tariffs at that time, and we couldn't get quartz. It was doubled just because of the tariff, the cost to get it out of China. We ended up starting to find places in Vietnam and getting quartz from there. Now I just hear that one of our good subcontractors that we have a great relationship with is starting to manufacture it here in the U.S. So, you know, they're providing a service now that may help us avoid some of these other costs and delays in the future. So it's really those, like you said, those relationships that we've built over the last 75 years and that we continue to rely on to help us guide the design team in a way that is beneficial to everybody. We're all partners in this. You know, it's the owner, us, the subcontractors. You know, I always say and think about, you know, for my subcontractors having a great job, financially speaking, and just in terms of being on the job, then we have a great job. And if we have a great job, the owner's going to get a great product and a great job. So it's us working early to find those key elements so that we can avoid it. Lumber will come up, but, you know, that discussion is separate to itself. But, you know, working through those early is the key.
So true. And Nate, I think, you know, this is probably a perfect scenario for you to chime in on the issue with materials and working with the manufacturers and the product suppliers.
this is your day-to-day working with these guys, trying to fill orders and get material to projects. How do you manage that day-to-day working with your partners when you have these kinds of challenges?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, the Wall Street Journal just yesterday ran on their second page, a full article on just what Jen and JD were mentioning about looking for alternatives. And the challenge today is just like they use this language, a whack-a-mole. For an example, instead of the insulation, people were using Rockwool in order to insulate. Well, Rockwool now is unavailable. You have our doors. I mean, they even mentioned doors and windows in there. Doors and windows are manufactured with, you know, you think most of it is pretty crummy wood leftovers. However, the stiles and rails of the doors are made of aspen strand lumber. Now that is unavailable. The same aspen strand of lumber is what people use engineered wood to be structural, and so that's become unavailable. So these things. The other thing that isn't, it would seem a little odd that we're talking about it, is a chip shortage. The heck does a chip shortage have to do with us? I can't get Schlage lock. I mean, a major manufacturer just told me that I cannot get an electrified lock till March of 2022. So I don't know necessarily whether some of these things are just unavailable or whether it's a toilet paper scenario where people are buying it up. With the pre-construction, I think JD's got a really big challenge for us. It used to be, and I think you're right, where our suppliers would keep their pricing, not a problem. Half a year later, not a problem. Today, a metric ton of steel has gone up from September of 2020. It was run about 532. At the end of September, it was $1,947. We're getting surcharges because they can't even apply a list price. Right, they're just getting surcharges. Just got one from Steelcraft, 45%. So what we're looking for is we need to understand how to put escalation fees, when do they need it. But I think what's critical here is the lack or the slowness or the delay of information, and rightfully so. When we can't order anything until a lot of parts and pieces are determined is what needed. So you might have, it may sound so silly, do I need an exit device on this door? Do I need a close? And the guy, well, what's the problem? Why don't you go ahead and order the main portion, which is the steel component of a frame or a door? Because I can't, the preps are different. Life safety requirements force me to have material made at the factory. In fact, what's new, and probably it's going to hit you soon, is that any fire-rated door, now it has to be glazed, any wood fire-rated door needs to be glazed at the factory. Just to give you an understanding of what it's like, we had some firelight safety glass, a weird size for a school in Beverly Hills, and typically it'd be 5/16, but in this particular case, they wanted something close to an inch of firelight safety. Go ahead and get to the wood door manufacturer. Guy said, no problem. It'll take about 8 to 10 weeks. This is Eggers, a big company. But don't worry, because your doors won't be made in 23 weeks. And I'm looking, and you're just looking at this. And by the way, your price that I gave you is only available for 14 days. After that, don't know.
Okay. So, okay. We're done. No, so to your point, so it's really interesting, you know, One of my favorite company stories. I love Southwest Airlines, right? Herb Kelleher, who ran Southwest for years and years. You know, one of the things that Southwest Airlines has always done is they pre-purchase their fuel. They wait till there's a lull in the market, and then they purchase at the lowest price. And then you always hear, well, how can Southwest keep their? Now others have caught on to it, but you know, for decades, it's like, how could Southwest manage to keep their pricing so low, even when gas would, you know, fuel would go through the roof, and they would keep their pricing, and it was part of their reputation. It was part of their core identity and what they did. I feel like our industry has never really had to do that, because there's always, you talk about the whack-a-mole scenario, right?
It's the Wall Street Journal's terminology, not even mine.
Yeah, but, you know, so manufacturing in China was a problem. So then everyone thought, okay, let's go offshore. Most of that, we'll move it over to Vietnam. Well, that's great until Vietnam gets hit with COVID and then basically everybody shut down, right? So now you can't get it from Vietnam. Well, okay, where's the next place to go? And I can't help but feel like there is an anti-China sentiment right now as it comes to manufacturing and products and product, you know, deliverables. And I don't think that's going to change. From what I'm hearing, I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, which I think that opens up new doors for Vietnam and the Philippines and Mexico. And at the same time, there seems to be a very strong sentiment. I can't recall seeing the Buy American sentiment as strongly as I see it now. I don't think you can get American products any easier than you can get products from anywhere else right now. Delivery charges are still going to be outrageous. Raw materials are still hard to come by, and they're still pricey. But does that change your thoughts, and does that make you look more towards internal? Does it make you look at more buying local? Does it make you look for more opportunities to shop closer to home, to specify product closer to home?
Well, may I stick in here? From construction people, we're super technical. I mean, we live and die by those specifications. We pivot. We all pivot. We pivot, pivot, pivot. And we never know what the day's going to bring. We pivot. Buy America, for the most part, like we're contracted out for a bunch of subways, and some of those funds are provided by the transportation department. There's Buy America. We're doing VA hospitals. There's Buy America. It has always been Buy America. Buy American, Buy America is all these little technical terms. But we have been doing Buy America forever. Our frames and doors are not able to be mass produced. They're always been American. It's the parts and pieces of locks and that part where those come from other areas. Those things are challenging, and you just chase them around the world, but that's mostly for the manufacturer to do. For a subcontractor, he's strictly stuck to go to X manufacturer. We've promised to get the material done, engineered with a fixed price to our clients. So I think Buy America has been around in commercial end of things for quite some time. In the res part of things, where you know, might not be so much for labor union as well as some of those hard American products, that is probably where there'd be a big effect.
Same experience?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we deal with it as much in our, we try to stay away from the public works entities and that type of work. We're lucky enough to be able to do that over the last 20 or 30 years. We were involved in it at one point, and I do recall, I mean, we do still do some of the our concrete business in the public works business world, and they do have the Buy America. They've had it for as long as I can remember, sure. Too. But in terms of, you know, the local entities and the locality of products, that is almost, in a sense, part of the, I'll call it the LEED specifications as well. You know, when LEED became big 5-10 years ago, they have a clause in there regarding locality of products as well. So you're trying to buy within a certain range, whether it's 500 or 1,000 miles of the project site. So that's a push as well. So we see that too. And it's become more part of the business, I'll say. California's been on the fronting edge of Title 24 when that came out years ago. And LEED is just now another way to do business. It's part of the way that we do business. It's not another check mark that we do. It's just part of the everyday world. So I see the locality of products. Just, you know, every owner tries to be more conscious about that. So
I don't know if there's a way to do this. It was, you know, back to that Southwest Airlines example. Is there a way for you to expedite purchasing materials, to pre-purchase materials, to get ahead of this?
Thanks for bringing that back up, because I wanted to comment on that. We actually are, and that's, you know, when probably 10 months ago, when we started really seeing lumber skyrocket from, you know, its average of $300 to $400 to $1,800. And that's one of the things that we started looking into. We're asking all of our subcontractors at that point, hey, you know, what's your price for this job? Part two, what's your price for this job if I told you to buy the material right now and put it in a warehouse and keep it until I needed it? What's that add or what's that alternate price? So we've been doing that for a while now in the pre-construction. We've actually secured it to make it happen the last two projects, I believe, with regards to lumber. Before we even sign the contract with the owner, as Jen was saying, we're trying to do everything earlier and earlier so that we can get the material, know we have it. We just did that with a job in San Diego, a apartment building that we're just kicking off construction on. We awarded, we signed a contract with the subcontractor for the framing and the lumber, told him to buy the lumber, put it in a warehouse, bonded warehouse, and we'll pay the extra amount just so that we know that we're not messing around with what the cost is lumber going to be in 2 months. We know what it is now. Let's get it and purchase it. So we were able to do that. And we're doing that on a few other jobs here, specifically with lumber being one of the priciest and one of the, you know, most radical, you know, changes in the last few years. Steel is the same way. That's a little more difficult to figure out how to get that in a warehouse, but we're still trying to think through that one.
Yeah, and to add to that, I was just working on another project that has an extended schedule because it has a soil remediation part at the beginning of it, but we're trying to buy materials or lock in pricing, I guess, with subcontractors to get to an agreement, and they're all like, wait a minute, this isn't happening till 2023. There's no suppliers that will, you know, we can't guarantee that. So we've been working through that, and I was working more on the mechanical electrical trades, and obviously they have aluminum and they have all these different components, right, that are also skyrocketing. So for the HVAC equipment, we did just what you were talking about with the lumber. We were able to, like, basically we're going to pre-purchase, find a storage. He said the storage is cheaper than whatever his, you know, they wanted to include for escalation. And we're going to store it for over a year. And it kind of seems crazy, but it's cheaper than in the bet that everybody wants to make on this escalation. Now, electrical, unfortunately, is even harder because, of course, those switchgear components require LADWP, Department of Water and Power. And usually those things happen over a year, year and a half, and they cannot order it, similar to what you're talking about with hardware. It's very specific to the actual thing that you're going to need. So we need all the specifications before we can purchase. So on that one, unfortunately, we had to kind of work with the sub and the owner and say, okay, we're being very transparent. We've included up to this much escalation. If something occurs beyond this, we're going to have to revisit everything because there's nothing else that we could have done that anybody was willing to take the risk on. So there are things that are still in hopes that maybe the market calms down by 2023. And, you know, that is a hope that it does start to level out as things become back to normal and things like that. But nobody's willing to put ink to paper on that risk right now. So
if I may add one thing, just to share an experience with our metal supplier manufacturer. So obviously everything they do is metal. We get a quote 14 days later, it goes up and call the guy. So look, I'm giving you a purchase order. Why can't you buy the rolls of steel and roll them out? And he was explaining to me, no one is offering metal futures at the moment. You can't lock in, you can't buy a commodity on a price that's distance if no one's willing to lock in. So even though you might, it's just not available for you. So you're really at the risk, and I love the way you're doing it, Jen, is by being transparent with the owner and saying, look, I've got a 7%, I got a 15%, I'll ask for backup. I mean, everyone right now is at the mercy of the market. There is no way to sugarcoat something which is miserable. I mean, upcharges for you guys is like, and it's terrible.
Well, and that's exactly the word I was going to use, transparency. That's what it is about. It's about the transparency that with the owner. You know, we can make it an allowance and then have them take all the risk, but, you know, we're partners in this, and that's not the way that we do business. So it's more about just being transparent with the owner, showing them, you know, the facts of what's going on in the industry and showing them the backup of, I can't, even if I wanted to, I can't guarantee a price on something because I can't get it until weeks from now. Lumber was the same way with the futures. We were having that conversation 3 to 4 months ago about why can't we buy futures? You can't. It just wasn't happening at the time. Luckily, lumber's come down a little bit, and that's more stable than it was. But, you know, now it's like, now that it's come down, is everybody going to get back into the market and buy more, and then it's going to shoot back up? So it's really the transparency. We're seeing those conversations earlier and earlier in the job about being aware and being, you know, made known those conversations.
It feels to me like those that are nimble and those that are creative are the ones that survive and thrive in situations like this. You know, I'm just wondering if we're on the precipice of, you know, larger firms opening up their own warehouses in San Bernardino next to the Amazon facility where you're storing, you know, materials. If that's what it's going to come down to, because, I mean, look, what they're saying now is they don't expect supply chain to start, the wrinkles to start coming off of this until at least mid-2023. And I think that's really safe to say. And listen, once something happens once, it can happen again. And I think, you know, when the Spanish flu hit in 1920, nobody expected it to be what it was. But 100 years makes people forget a thing or two. And I don't think anyone thought that what happened was possible. But let's not forget, the pandemic isn't really what started this. We had tariffs in place. I think we talked about these at the beginning. We had tariffs in place, which started jacking up prices to the point where people were really uncomfortable with the, I think it was the speed with which it was changing. It's not that things are changing. It's the speed and the lack of notice that things are happening that you're trying to figure out, not what you're in, but what's happening next. The chip shortage, I don't think anybody saw, and I don't think anybody realizes that wood, concrete, steel, no, they don't need chips, but now locks, appliances, just about anything else that thinks or acts or that you need to monitor is going to need chips. So that being said, from a pre-construction standpoint, how do you try to solve for the problems that you can't see now? I see that smirk, and you're like, oh, don't ask me that. I have no idea.
That's a great question. But, no, I think, you know, the idea of having a warehouse full of ready-to-made or ready available items, it's tough. It really is because, you know, we rely, construction has always been a on-time, necessary, you need it, I'll get it. You know, business where it's, they call it what, just-in-time delivery, you know, and we've always had that mindset of, all right, we're going to make our schedules that everything aligns perfectly. Doors are going to come right at the time that I need them. Locks are going to follow and windows and so forth and so on. But, you know, I think it is good to broaden and to think about how we can have things ready. As Jen mentioned, we're pre-buying some of the equipment for mechanical. We've done this with windows. Historically, on most of our jobs, all the wood framed, we'll rent some container boxes and just store them, either whether it's we have room on the site or somewhere off site, and get the windows there as early as possible and put them in that storage bin. And when we need them, we got them. That was historically one of the shortfalls in wood frame construction. We're seeing that now with elevators, even. Elevators is a good one for the chips as well. But we are seeing ourselves develop a system where we can have the parts and pieces of the elevator on our job or in a bonded warehouse near our job as soon as possible. We don't care if it's going to sit in there for 6 months without anybody touching it, because we know that when we need it, it's there. So it's to your point, you know, is it, it maybe it's not a Amazon-sized warehouse that we're going to go rent, but it's these ideas of having that. And I think we've been doing that for a few trades here and there for the past 5 to 10 years that I can recall. And I think it's just going to broaden from there to more trades.
Does that being said, from the product side, and something that you had already sort of touched on, is this idea of reimagining using different materials. And if you can't do it with steel, can you do it with hard plastic? And if you can't use hard plastic, then you're using wood. Do you see a lot more of that happening right now? And do you think that that's a temporary thing? Or do you think that that's going to be something that we're all going to be taking a look at long term?
I do see it happening. I don't think it's been that large scale where it's been like work, like creating a brand new product. Like it's more like this other product similar in nature, maybe we can substitute that product for this. But that is from my perspective as a general contractor. I don't know what product like manufacturers are doing. I'm sure they're starting to think outside the box too. If they can't get the raw materials to make the product they normally do and sell, they're not going to survive. So they're going to have to think outside the box to be like, okay, I can get this other product. Maybe I can produce something similar. And then they have to go through all this testing and requirements through the city. The city of Los Angeles requires a specific rigorous component for that. So that may all be happening. I haven't personally experienced that too much. It's more been substituting a like product that we already know is about, like, has already been made and available. So whether it'll continue or not, sure, I think that what what we talked about earlier is that we always kind of pivot always. I mean, that was one of the things about my job that I've loved the most from the beginning, is that you don't know what your day is going to bring. And we aren't in a manufacturing world. We're not mass producing the same thing over and over again. Every single building is different. Even if you want to take the same exact design, you put it on a different lot, it's got a different foundation. So it's different. You can never build the same thing again. So I think that we are used to in our industry to pivot and all these things that kind of come out of the blue, if you will, like we didn't anticipate. You know, that's kind of our day to day. So this is another curveball that's been sent our way, and through it all, like, everybody's kind of being as imaginative as possible. So I do think that people will, produce different types of material that maybe even be more sustainable, be closer to home, all those things. And in the long run, maybe be a benefit that will continue past this, because that's we have a climate crisis going on as well. So producing things that are closer to home can only benefit that, and that might become mandatory and so on and so forth. So this might just have a dual purpose.
I think one of the main through lines from this is that pivot is a big word, and it's an important one, being nimble, being flexible, for sure. But there are so many things that are out of your control. And I'm curious, from your standpoint, relationships are really so important, and there's a currency in the relationship. When times like these sort of stress and strain those relationships, how does that affect your ability or the manner in which you reevaluate the products that you show and the people that you work with? Because, when you have a showroom, you have X amount of square feet and you're working with a certain amount of manufacturers. You can't, if you're going to add someone, generally you're going to take one away because you can't add more square feet to show other product. Does that change the companies that you're working with based on how they're treating you? And I preface that by saying, you know, when you work with a company that is adding surcharges after additional fees, after additional surcharges, after additional fees, at some point you recognize that everyone's got new challenges. At the other, at the sort of other side of that coin is, I get you've got, I guess you've got issues. I understand that. We've got issues too. Don't make me shoulder all of the weight for this. Does that change the way you evaluate your partnerships as well?
Boy, that's a loaded question. There's a supply side of things, our manufacturing relationships that we have. So we have product that we buy from thing manufacturers. For an example, Steelcraft would be a national manufacturer of frames. They're great. So they kick out a lot of the same thing over and over again. But then when we're doing engineered work, commercial work, we're going to a specific custom hollow metal manufacturer, let's say like Stiles. And there I can pick up a phone and have a good relationship with them, ask them the same questions. Why the heck am I getting beat over the head? I think the industry in general, as far as the commercial end of things, is embracing new technology in order to squeeze out what they can, like BIM. Trying to get much more than just putting things down in a two-dimensional, they want a three-dimensional view of things so we can figure out what the issues are. When it's only on vellum and a blue line, it's difficult to understand what the conflicts are. So there, BIM, it's really been a super success. I think for mechanical plumbing, I think for other types of trades, it's great. Getting the things pre-built is great. But for a lot of other trades, it's just not there yet. So the industry is really working on it. But one other thing on the flip side, so I kind of explained the manufacturer side, on our client side, we spend a lot of time and money putting out bids. I mean, that sucks out the life of a company. And that means we're putting out a risk. This man has went ahead, JD went ahead and did his pre-con. He has some idea what his budget is. It's going to get in Jen's hand to actually build. I know what the conversations are like. You're calling and saying, what were you thinking? What were you thinking? How are we supposed to do this? And he has, well, this was our concept and this was how we went to market. This is how we did it. It didn't work out. Bidding it is, putting out a bid, it is an extremely time-consuming, valuable tool that we have, but it also exposes us to risk. Every bid we put out exposes our company to risk. You don't want to be putting out bid unless you have somebody who's got 10, 20 years, who's got that experience. You don't want somebody putting up a building unless they've got that experience. You can tell a good contractor from other types. So for us, if we could develop a closer relationship with a contractor, saying, look, I will cover you. And today that's what's happening. We've never been, in one way we're blessed because we've never been in a situation where people are begging us to give them a price. They don't have coverage. On the other hand, I don't have coverage either. We're out of people. We're out of time. We're out of people. So it really would make things very streamlined, and we could QC our quotes and take care of them if we had less quotes to put out, meaning we had a better relationship where our client can say, this is the winning horse, we're gonna go with them. It's difficult, they've got it, you know, because sometimes you have some things that are not our wheelhouse that we're gonna be expensive on. Other people, they've got it down pat. I wouldn't even claim to go take a shot at doing some of the res stuff because I'm gonna be expensive, we're a union. With the quality stuff, we're just gonna be expensive. On the other hand, when you see a bid and you're just looking at it, you've got, used to be, the two bids that you had, one was north, one was south, you always took the third guy right in the middle. Today, everybody is forced, especially when there's competitive bidding, is to take the lowest bid, even though it might not be the best for the job, for the owner at the end of the day, and unfortunately, Jen is gonna inherit some of that garbage and goes along with it. So it's a fine, it really is a dance between all of us from the entire circle. We really are a team. It's just, there's some days where we like our team members and some days we really don't.
It's so well said. And now I'm curious the other side of that equation.
Yeah, I'll take that. I mean, I think you're dead on, and I don't think there's much. I mean, from our perspective, we're twofold. We have a responsibility to the client, cost, schedule, responsibility to the client. You know, if the architect's specifying or if the design team is specifying something, and we know there's a cheaper way to do it or there's a less expensive way to do it, we can bring it up. You know, that's our due diligence to the owner. That's what we're hired for. As you mentioned, you know, if we do have bids that come in that are north, south, and in the middle, we're lucky enough to be in a position that 90% of our work is negotiated, so we don't always have to take the low bid. But we have those conversations with the owner about that, and again, it's a two-way transparency street, you know, with the owner of meeting a budget that they're set for, that they can do the project for. You know, they have their financing that they have to meet as well, so we have to be conscious of that as well. So we have great relationships with our subcontractors. I would love it if I could just go out to a few different subcontractors and say, hey, let's do this job. Unfortunately, again, it falls back on my due diligence with the owner. I have to show them that, hey, I have multiple bids here. Sometimes I'm required to get three bids. Sometimes I'm not. But when I am, I have to go get those multiple bids. And I don't like having those conversations with subs that we have great relationships with. Hey, who am I bidding against? How many people are bidding? I have to. You know the game. You know you have to do that. So we get to that point. But at the end of the day, for us, on most of our negotiated work, it's a discussion point. It's of, you know, who can do the job? Who has the most manpower right now? Who can guarantee the work? Who, you know, who are we more concerned about at this stage in the game? And it depends on other factors as well. How much work do we already have with that company? Is that company doing 80% of our work right now? Are we spreading them thin with the work? Are we concerned that giving them another job will, not have the available resources? So there's a lot of factors that go into it. Again, I think the biggest benefit for Morley is that we don't do a lot of low bid, you know, we do a lot of negotiated work, so it gives us that flexibility.
Final question. I'm asking you to pull out the crystal ball and give me your best guess. And of course, since, you know, it's not like we're recording this or anything, we won't hold you to it. I'm just curious, if you had a crystal ball, what you would predict, both geopolitical and pandemic related issues. So the fallout from everything that we've been dealing with, the supply chain crisis, the actual manpower, the people power behind it, the tariffs, the everything, all of the above. Jen, you look most confident. I'll start with you.
Confident in what? What are you asking now? I think what does the future have for us? Or
I mean, if you had to look at your crystal ball and said all of the pain points that you have right now, are they going to be worse? Are they going to get better? If they are going to get better, when do you imagine supply chains? And I know you don't have the answer. I'm just curious what in the planning and in the strategic conversations that you're having, what you think.
I think what we're landing on as the entire industry and the group, which is interesting, is that planning is even more a focus. We used to have a goal, you know, like when I inherit a job from pre-construction, that we want to buy out all our subcontracts in the first 4 to 6 months, let's say, of a two and a half year job. And like he said, you know, prices were held for 6 months to a year. So that was a good goal. And sometimes we didn't make it. Sometimes we did make it. It was okay. Now our goal is 30 days, buy them all, because we can't. There's problems with every single trade and every single supply chain. Okay, so that puts a hurry up on our processes, which is okay for us. I mean, we're figuring out how to do it. What it's doing, though, it's also putting pressure on the owner and the design team to make up their minds. It used to be time was money, so let's start digging that hole while we're completing the design. Let's start doing some of these things while we're still figuring out, you know, what type of door we want at the front entrance and what things we want to do, because we have time. Unfortunately now, because lead times are so crazy, because we want to lock in pricing, because the owner can't take risk of floating out a job that doesn't have a budget or a timeline, they have to make those decisions ahead of time. So maybe what will happen is that they have to get further along in the design process before we start building, which might not be a bad thing in the long run, just because, you know, it makes construction go smoother when there aren't as many changes, for sure. It helps communication. We're kind of be a little bit more streamlined. But that also draws out, you know, their process too on the financing side and the lending side and the things like that. So, which I'm not as, you know, burst in, so I don't know how that will balance out. But I think that is one of the challenges now. We've been, you know, I typically have come from a commercial background with very unique buildings, you know, that they don't want it to be cookie cutter kind of things that Design Hardware has done a lot of work with, where there are typically long lead times and things like that. Now it's becoming, you know, more the residential, the schools, the hospitals, the things that do kind of have repeat, have just as long as lead times and things. But what's good about those buildings is that, you know, they're not as unique. They don't have to be as custom, things like that. So you can substitute materials and you can, you know, maybe they won't have as many changes, or they'll forego that change that they may have done just to mitigate that risk type deal. So maybe that's a possibility.
Nate?
Kaiser hospitals try to deal with this by doing a templated hospital. You want to grab a Kaiser plan, you sure as heck will know your way around it if you've done one or two before. There is such a thought process to template these things. Realistically, though, our infrastructure is shot. We're rebuilding our schools that are existing, taking an existing skeleton and throwing on a new face. God help us all. I mean, it's difficult. The technical requirements for these buildings are becoming more complicated. And the people inspecting us are becoming more complicated. Whereas a contractor thinks he's off the job, in comes an inspector that the owner's hiring, and rightfully so. We just finished, Lawa, we just finished a big police station. In fact, today is our last day there. It's a root canal every day. I mean, we had 15 people, no joking, 15 people on representing the LA World Airport and inspecting every, we have never been inspected so difficult. You do one of those jobs, you don't go back so quickly. The technical parts of all the different things that require bulletproof, soundproof, fire life safety, electronics, glazing, everything that's now becoming part, the architects, God bless them, are taking advantage of unique materials and putting all of this together. What the future bodes for us is exciting. I mean, I'm excited about it because every day, like Jen said, every day is different. I'm sure, JD, you're provided a set of plans and go at it, guys. And my goodness, sliding barn doors, big thing, right? Barn doors with fire rating, with automatic closers, whatever you can imagine, glass-rated doors, all the different wonderful parts of a building there. It's exciting, but it's challenging and it's risky. So we need to invest in our people. We need to invest in our clients. Our clients need to invest with us, just their time. And I love, Jen, we were saying the transparency is what's paramount. You got to be up front with the owner. You got to be up front with the architects. This is possible. This is not. And, you know, give a little leeway. It's not so easy just to say no, and that's not acceptable. You got to be a little bit more flexible. So we're a little nervous, but we're excited about the future.
JD?
I think I might have slept through a few political science classes, but I'll touch on something that Jen kind of glazed over a while back in terms of the people. People are rethinking what they are doing, what their lives mean to them. And I think that's going to affect every industry. And I think you're asking what is changing and what is going to stay with us. That's one thing that's going to stay with us, I think. I think it's really this last 18 to 24 months has really made people think about their relationships, their families, their self, and what they're doing and how they can better society. So I think that's going to stay with us in terms of the manpower and how we use people and how people go to our industry. We already struggled with our industry in terms of getting people into the trades. Construction was not the sexiest business to be in, to be out in the field and doing work every day. But it's made it even, I think, more of a struggle the last 18 months. So I think that's going to stay with us. What I think is exciting, as Nate mentioned, is, you know, we do awesome work. You know, we get to do all types of buildings, whether it's a residential, you know, multifamily building, whether it's a museum or whether it's a cathedral in downtown LA. And that's exciting, you know, going to work and seeing your product and seeing what we as, you know, engineers, project managers, owners, clients, suppliers, what we put together as a team, that's exciting. I think the market is going to struggle, and it's no surprise that we have been struggling for a while. And I think people are much more selective in what they go after. The financing is harder to get. The jobs are harder to put together. We didn't talk about it, but the time frames in which something gets approved is harder to get. Now, the city, you know, to get any permits through the city is harder to get. I think that's going to stay with us for a little bit more, probably, you know, maybe whether it's a year or 2 years. I think we're going to still struggle through that aspect of it. But we're excited. I think, you know, things are hoping to pick up here, whether it takes, again, 12 months, 18 months. But, you know, I think the slowdown that we experience, I think we're seeing bright spots. So.
I like that you ended with optimism. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for doing it in person. Was it weird? A little bit?
A little bit.
A little bit, right? Hopefully it'll get easier. I think, you know, it's funny because as we're talking about these kinds of things, you know, for me, that's one of the things that I'm hoping for is to get out more like this and that it gets easier and that I actually know socially how to address the whole mask situation because I have not mastered that yet. So, but with that, thank you. Thank you very much for doing this. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer, JD, and Nate for taking the time to come out to Design Hardware and participate in this incredible conversation. Thank you for listening to Doctoring Up Design, and make sure you are subscribing to the show. You can find all the links to subscribe as well as contact the participants in the show notes. This is Doctoring Up Design, a podcast created to help the design and architecture industry navigate the constantly changing business climate. For more information on this and future episodes, check the show notes and visit designhardware.com.